Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to the first ever intro to this show. Here is The Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Mary's a little bit taken aback. I'm not sure she's ready for a life of melody, but welcome, Mary. Hey, thank you very much. Thank you.
This is Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
We're your co-host. This weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitchers, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I didn't know that you were really going to sing it.
Well, when Liz Smith says sing, you sing. If I've learned anything from our engineer, it's do it right. Do it like she wrote it.
All right, so it's just me and Kuzme in the studio today. We do have lots of updates and lots of stuff going on, and we've been having a lot of fun with fermentations.
That's absolutely true.
So, first of all, I want to give a big shout-out to everybody who participated in the NYC Pro-Am that was put on by Bitter and Esters and Robert Sherrill. So, Robert Sherrill and John LaPola.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, and it was a really successful and really incredible and inspiring event.
I would agree. Lots of good home brews, excellent collaboration beers, and commercial beers as well. The pretzels were delicious. You got a pretzel with beer.
Yes,
I love pretzels. They are really good with beer. Anyway, and congratulations
to
the winner,
Justin Wilson. Justin and Amanda Wilson, who collaborated.
Amanda
with
Gonzalez. Oh, Justin Wilson.
Oh, sorry. Yes, Amanda Gonzalez. Amanda Lee Gonzalez, as per Facebook and actuality too. It wouldn't say it in Facebook if it wasn't true, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They collaborated at Greenpoint Beer and Ales with Christopher Prout. And what did they make, Mary?
They made
collaborated
a lacto-driven beer.
A lacto-driven.
I had to photo.
Everything
I
that was
my
hip, that is currently hip about beer, they did to this beer. So it was a hip hops, a mosaic, I believe. They did a kettle sour.
Kettle soured pale Brett beer with rhubarb and mosaic hops.
With rhubarb. A rhubarb
called
kettle
Acidifus
sour.
Pie.
That's right. Acidifus Pie, because they used three different kinds of acid, right? They used citric acid in the
kettle to bring the pH down a little bit to make it more hospitable.
That's right. And then they pitched lacto on that. And then they fermented with Brett.
Then Justin had a beer that his home brew was called Bullet with Butterfly Wings, and that was a dry hop sour. That was like a 6-month-old lambic, right? That was dry hop. That was also delicious.
That was very good.
Yeah.
You guys totally should have been there.
It's just super exciting to see, you know, just really good homebrews. I have to be honest, the commercial beers were good, but I thought all the homebrews were, those were my favorite.
The homebrews or the collaborations?
No, the homebrews. Straight up homebrews.
Just
across the board. The mm-hmm. straight up homebrews. Katie Sloan did a Queen KT Feisty Blonde. So it was an Imperial Blonde with smoke malts and chipotle peppers. That was 7.6 ABV. Very good. It was nicely balanced and very drinkable. I would never have known it was that high of alcohol.
I liked her collaboration, too.
She did
it with Rockaway, and they brought a cask. And I have a strong affinity for cask-conditioned beer. They did a dark mild that I thought was absolutely lovely.
And then Simon Tepes did a Belgo IPA, which was delicious. Jason Garris did a Summer Solstice Saison, Belgian Saison. Glenn Couples did a Belgian table beer. And then we already talked about Justin. So very impressive showing of homebrews and regular beers. And that was held at Cove and Hoven in Prospect Heights. It was a really cool bar.
That is true. I unfortunately couldn't stay for a second session. Mary stayed for two sessions. I went to Greenpoint Beer Works and hosted a tour. A lot of fun's going on over at Greenpoint Beer Works there.
That's your first official tour, right?
That I hosted there, yes. for Urban Oyster. Urban Oyster is a local tour group that takes people on historical beer tours through Bushwick, Brooklyn, and also does brewery tours and does random other things as well, but mostly beer-centric. Great. They took people sailing, too. At the same time, my friend Bobby, who works in the keg room over at Greenpoint Beer Works, was actually out on a sailboat. And I was jealous of his tour.
That was an Urban Oyster sail, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. Very cool. I didn't know they were doing sails.
Yeah, man. But with that, there's a tap room over at Greenpoint Beer Works that will be open officially on the 9th. And so it'll, for the first time since they've been open in 2003, they will have a tap room where you can taste their wares as fresh as it can be.
And buy pints and glasses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kuzma, you're working at Greenpoint Beer
I'm currently
Beer
working
Works.
At Greenpoint Beer Works. One thing we haven't really talked much on the show is that 508 closed on January 1st. It's been a fun journey since then. I am planning on opening a brewery, but in the meantime, I'm working over and at Greenpoint Beer Works, helping out my boys Kelly Taylor and Robert Crafton, who we've had on the show, who is now the brewery manager over there. Tony Bellis, who's part of the upcoming brewery, Kings County Brewers Collective. It's a great team over there.
All right, so I want to know, because actually we don't talk about this that much. What are you doing at Greenpoint? So Greenpoint is, they make beers for Heartland breweries in New York City, as well as the Flatiron Hall and Houston Hall, and then also Kelso. They're doing, what else? Empire, some Empire beers are brewed there.
Yep, and this new brewery called Kuzet Libations.
Oh, yes.
They gypsy brew outside of there, too. This guy, Chris. And
we also make our beer there. Chris will be making the second batch this Thursday, right? We're going to make another Revenge of the Emu. But what do you do at Greenpoint Beer Works? So part of the reason that you're there is because you're trying to open a production brewery that's significantly larger than 508.
A complete opposite situation than what I was dealing with at 508 Gastrobrewery. 508 Gastrobrewery was a two-barrel system that was an afterthought to the restaurant, and pretty much a Frankenbrewery. And Greenpoint Beer Works is making roughly at least 60 barrels per day.
Big the system's 30?
It's a 30-barrel system. They're doing two batches a day. There are 22 fermenters, and they range in sizes from, we've got 315s, and then a decent amount of 30s and 60s and 90s throughout the things. What do I do there? So I've been trained in almost every part of the brew house over there, but really I'm doing Charlie work. I'm, stomping out vermin and cleaning kegs, filling kegs, going to the deep corners of the earth and cleaning things up, replacing things that need replaced. It's been around for a while, and I'm doing a lot of that stuff. I'm also filling in for the cellarman when needed. I'm also filling, they call me Special Projects Kuzmi, and I'm filling barrels. Today, I blended Concord grapes into a lambic ale that has been aging for 739 days, which was pretty cool, actually, I gotta say.
Yeah,
tasting awesome.
We got a little soft preview of the tasting room a couple weeks ago, and Kelly did a tasting of the barrels.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have 8 barrels of this lambic, and I know we're not allowed to call it a lambic because it's not made in an
American sour.
This is an American sour. This is American wild ale with a lambic culture yeast blend. I think the Roselaire. I don't remember. Actually, I wasn't there 2 years ago when they made it. So,
what else are you doing? What have you learned?
What have I learned?
Yeah. What are you learning?
Well, one thing that's awesome about this, one of the big giant differences from what I was doing, I mean, I was a 508, while we had a professional license, I do believe and I do relate it to glorified homebrewing, because I wasn't beholden to any flagships, and I didn't really treat it in the way of having a flagship. I had 6 lines to deal with, and I was very experimental, and I kept things moving. I'm the kind of drinker that I'm a promiscuous drinker, as Robert Sherrill calls himself as well. It's like, and a promiscuous brewer as well. So while I would make some things again, twice, right? There were a couple beers that I made, but they never made them back to back. Kept things moving. Here, there's also being a contract brewer for other breweries. There are things to brew to spec, and brewing these things over and over, carving to the exact volume, consistency, quality, shelf life. There's a giant DE filter. In 2 days at Greenpoint Beer Works, I dealt with more beer than I made in a single year at 508. It was pretty awesome.
And there's something else. Oh, you've also been canning.
We have been canning. Yeah. Tyler has a canning called mobile canning line called Ironheart Canning, and we've been canning over at Greenpoint Beer Works. He cans his industrial IPA, which is a double IPA, 10.5% IPA, the Pilsner, and the Nut Brown.
So I think that's one thing that's really cool is mobile canning, and I know it's somewhat controversial depending on who you're talking to, but I think as long as you get you're using a lot of these mobile canning. Companies know what they're doing, that they have great systems. And I think it's really cool to see cans out.
It is.
Everybody's got cans now thanks to mobile canning.
And it's not just plug and play. I mean, the canners need to dial in their process per brewery. But usually it's on the brewery itself. Like, the liquid needs to be really cold. The volumes of CO2 needs to be just right so that you're not losing too much and you don't have too much headspace. It can be a nightmare of a canning day if everything's not to spec.
Right.
You're not prepped for them to be there. And you can't have chunks of hops, you know, constantly
yeah.
Clogging their system. Or you can. It just takes – it's a longer day because you got to clean out that filter.
And while Kelso is doing large enough runs that he has his can screen printed, I think the cool thing is that a lot of the smaller brewers are using – they're not doing screen printed because you have to have a pretty huge volume in order to get cans screen printed for you. But they're shrink wrapping, they're stickers. I think some of the shrink wraps didn't look so great a few years ago, but now
they look.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, yeah. It's almost impossible to tell them apart. I mean, unless, you know, you could touch them and see, but sitting on a shelf, you can't tell the difference between screen printing. So I think there's a lot of really exciting stuff going around mobile canning.
I have to also say that, you know, a lot of stuff that I learned at the American Brewers Guild in Vermont is way more applicable here on this system than it was for me at 508. And so far as that it was a glorified, I mean, it was 508 was so close to my kitchen in a way. And this is like some real industrial, this is production brewing. It's great.
So you're learning a lot that you hope to apply.
Absolutely.
What's your number one? What's the biggest learning maybe in the last week or so? What was something that you were like amazed at or?
What, in the last
didn't
week?
Didn't know
yet. Oh, I don't really know that.
Did you cask too?
I did do a cask. Yeah, I fill casks. That's part of Special Project Kuzmi's job is filling casks and throw stuff in. I was very excited this week. Oh, so yeah, okay, this is good. I haven't done it in a long time, but we used to do it at Wandering Star, although I was only present for a couple times. But now I'm starting to use a fermenting beer as my priming sugar for casks. So, you know, we had an IPA that had just hit the fermenters two or three days just before I filled this cask, and instead of using priming sugar and adding a little bit of yeast to a beer that had already reached terminal gravity, we ended up taking some fermenting wort, which had both, you know, sugar that was still able to be fermented, and the yeast. It was all in one shopping, and so calculating that was what is the tricky part. But Kelly had a really nifty little spreadsheet that he got from John Mallett a long time ago that we dial into. You type in what you're going to be priming with, what the original gravity was, what the gravity is at the time that you're priming with, and how many volumes of CO2 you want your end result to end up at, and it'll tell you how much volume of that spice you would like to put in there. Spice
cool.
is the word for
that's something kind of I haven't done in a long time. Is done a cask beer. But it's pretty easy to do as a home brewer, right? What's the process for a home brewer if a home brewer wants to make a cask beer?
Depends on whether you have a cask or not. First of all, get yourself a cask. Or if you don't have a cask, then you can get use your 5-gallon carboy. And basically, you're going to prime it the same way you do a bottle, but a little bit less because you don't want as much CO2. And if you were going to throw it through a hand pump, which is how I would recommend doing it from a corny keg, then you definitely don't want it to be overcarbed because the hand pump won't work right. It will just get a lot of foam. But use 1/3 a cup of priming sugar into your 5-gallon pin, if you have a pin being a cask, or your corny keg. And you just let it roll. You keep it at room temperature for another week at least. But you don't want it too long. Cask is another beer that wants to be served fresh. It's best fresh.
And where can homebrewers get casks? Homebrew size casks.
UK right. Brewing Supplies sells them. UK Brewing Supplies sells pins. I advise, they make great product. They are not the cheapest. So if you do it, it's good to, you know, buy in bulk. Another producer that makes them are Geemacher, G-E-E-M-A-C-H-E-R, and they're pretty reasonably priced, and it's great to get stuff from them.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Get with your homebrew clubs and maybe buy in bulk. I think it's going to be totally worth it if you have a place to deliver it.
Yeah.
Also, and if you're a homebrew club and you're listening to this, or you're a homebrew store, please get them. Encourage us to just buy them on the fly. Just have some pretty casks in your or some, have some pins.
Yeah, and I just did a Google search for, you know, a 5-gallon pin cask, and actually there's quite a few of the homebrew suppliers, online homebrew suppliers that sell them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty cool.
One of the funnest things about this, too, is you can take a regular beer. So that the beer that we are talking about right now, the IPA that I did at Kelso and Greenpoint Beer Works, you know, you just take a hop sack and just dry hopping in a cask with different things, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah, and that's definitely a different way to take, you know, if you have a kind of a base pale ale or IPA recipe that you really like to do, but you want to switch it up a little at the end as an alternative, and it, you know, you dry hop in the cask and mm-hmm. get a lot of bang for your buck.
I do wish somebody, if anybody's listening, please make a 2.5-gallon cask.
That would be awesome. Speaking of education and knowledge, I just saw that the National Homebrewers Conference, the seminars from the National Homebrewers Conference are now up. So if you are not a American Homebrewers Association member, this is an excellent reason to join, regardless of anything else. You also get a subscription to Zymergy magazine and a bunch of other benefits, but this is actually one of my favorites. So unfortunately, if you guys have listened to our show, this is the first National Homebrewers Conference that Chris and I have missed in, I think, 4 years for me and 5 years for him. And so I'm definitely loading my phone up tonight with these seminars. That's what I'll be listening to as I walk around the city tomorrow during work. Yeah, that's true. We don't. But if you're not able to make it, I mean, they drop a lot of great knowledge. Those seminars are packed with great information. So definitely check that out.
They're going to drop almost as much knowledge as Mary is going to do on the second half of this show. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It. We'll talk to you more in a second.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to the show. I'm singing more.
All right, I'm browsing the HomebrewsAssociation.org. It's under How to Brew Resources Conference Seminars. So if you are a member, please log in there and download some of these seminars.
Before we go on too much into the world of Mary, I want to talk about my weekend that was set up by Mary. We were set up to go to a Japanese pickled class on Sunday morning, and it was a lot of fun. Thank you, Mary, for setting this up. I learned a lot from Mitsuru Kita and Asako Nonaka, who hopefully will be on the show in coming weeks. It was at the Rezo Box in Long Island City, and we made a Nuka bed.
What the heck is a Nuka bed?
A Nuka bed is a fermented bread. It's like a Japanese sourdough culture, but for pickling, and it is out of bran, rice bran, and salt, and just from the air cultures, kind of thing, and the outside of vegetables.
So what are we going to do with this? It's in our fridge.
It's in our fridge. It's not ready yet. So basically, to get the starter, you have some of the special bran that you can get from Japanese stores or rice bran, and you hit it with some salt. You hit it with some liquid, some water. You knead it together until it's about he said the texture of your earlobe. So it's like soft, but it's still consistent. But I mean, it's close enough to.
Right.
To I understood what he was saying. It was fine.
We can all kind of envision what that means. Yes.
And so it's like this pasty kind of thing, and then at that point you take just like kind of the scraps of some vegetables that you have, like not the meat nor the stuff that you want to eat, because eventually you're going to end up throwing these out. But basically, you're doing it, I think, to get the whatever sort of resident microflora is on the outside of these vegetables, so you cut off the stuff you're not going to eat at the time and put the rest into a salad that you are going to eat. But take these vegetable scraps, throw them in there, and then on daily for about 5 days, and not at room temperature. This is what I found interesting. It's like, it's going to slow ferment. You don't want it to be out in the air. Right now it's in a Ziploc bag it wasn't a sanitized bag. It's just a regular bag. It's fine. We want the stuff that's going on. And they also advised, mixing it with your hands so that the microflora from your hands get on it and help start the fermentation. However,
that was scary to you, I bet, wasn't it?
Well, it was like, okay, well scary because I was people I didn't know. But we all, for the class, we used gloves. And they're like, if you didn't use gloves, this would do faster. But, for sake of the class, we did that. And we all took home our share of the booty.
So we will let you know what we do with this natto.
But every day...
What is it?
Nuka.
Nuka.
Not natto.
Sorry,
natto is something very different. Something
right.
That I do not support.
And I do. But anyway, we'll get more into that at another show.
Who's me shudders. Nuka. It's called Nuka. And it's a Nuka bed. And basically what happens now, in probably 2 days... Every day I need to play with it a little bit. Not that I don't already. Every day I play with the Nuka bed... just agitate it, make sure that we're aerating it a little bit, kind of just like making sure that the culture stays fermented or stays active. And maybe day four, I'm going to take out the vegetable scraps that were in there that were basically a starter for this. And then I can start using it to put vegetables in. And, throw vegetables. Basically, you want to bury the vegetables underneath this Nuka. You're making a bed of Nuka in a very shallow or thick, depends on how much Nuka you have, pan that you leave in your Tupperware type thing. Bury some vegetables for 12 hours. In 12 hours, you have a very, very nice, awesomely pickled Japanese vegetable.
Awesome. So we will report back.
Yeah.
Next week. Speaking of vegetables, I did actually, I hit the green market today on my way home from work, the Union Square Green Market, to be specific. We have a lot. It's a great time for buying local produce here in New York City, and probably, I think, around most of the country, that's true. I picked up some rhubarb. We're at the tail end of the rhubarb season, but I did get some really nice-looking rhubarb and some gooseberries and then some tart cherries or sour cherries from Red Jacket, which I'm pretty excited about. So I haven't decided what I'm going to do with these, but I'm thinking about them. I picked them up to make beverages with them, probably not beer, probably something, either a sugar or a honey-based beverage, although I will also say that I get Google alerts on ferment and fermentation. One of my favorite beverages that I've made with rhubarb was actually a whey-based soda. So it was a whey-fermented soda. So low to very little, if no, alcohol. And I came across actually a blogger on, it's called Raising Generation Nourished. So raisinggenerationnourished.com. This was done June 27th, just the other day. And she has a really great recipe for simple fermented lemonade, which is using this whey technique that I'm talking about. And that's just a really delicious, fast-fermenting, nice summer beverage that anyone can make at home. So that's something I might think about using with my rhubarbs and gooseberries. Sour cherries, I don't know. And then I also picked up some garlic scapes today. So
that's right.
These are super fun. So I asked the guy, I meant to bring...
What are garlic scapes?
They're just the tops of garlic. It's the stem from which the seed head of the garlic bulb is formed. As the bulb begins to grow and mature, garlic stalks also begin to lengthen. During the growth period, the garlic scape begins to curve. Contained within the garlic scape is a great deal of flavor, although the stalk never does reach the level of the pungent garlic bulb itself.
I didn't know I was getting that answer.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So, I can't find my receipt. Anyway, I bought them at one of the local farms. And so Chris and I started our first batch of lacto-fermented garlic scape. What'd you put in it, Chris?
I did
chop them up, actually. Yeah. I rinsed them off, chopped them up.
You put the salt in.
Yeah.
I put the coriander, John Nagley's porch pepper blend. Our good friend John Nagley's been on the show. He does a lot of vinegar, and he's a great home brewer, a great palate. Been on the show maybe 3 times, I think. He gifted us about half a year ago with a pepper flake blend of hot peppers that dried
hot
peppers that he has grown on the porch of his queen's apartment. And just some black pepper, actually. Black pepper, coriander.
And John Nagley's
porch pepper blend.
We're basic picklers here. We haven't had as much experience with pickles as we have alcoholic beverages, for sure. So I did actually refer to the Pickle It brine calculator. So that's pickleit.com, PICKL-IT.com. And they have a great little brine calculator that is no brainers. I love ABV calculators, and, you know, we all use all home brewers use brewing software. So I think this is just a great cheater way. We used around like 2.1% brine, salt content brine. So I just stuck this in the calculator and it was really easy. We used a sea salt. So sea salt, it all crammed into a half gallon mason jar, and then we use the recap lids, which are these plastic lids that I ordered off Amazon. You can order them from other places online as well, but that's what I did. I do a lot of my half gallon experimental fermented alcoholic beverages in these half gallon batches. It's a great way to experiment with flavor, and use that with a number 5.5 stopper and an airlock. So we'll see how that goes. It might be ready by next week's show as well. But that's one thing I'm excited about. Now that the book is done and out, I am continuing to make a bunch of beverages. I'll be speaking at the Long Island Beer and Malt Enthusiast meeting on Long Island in Oceanside on Wednesday night. And this is kind of, I've talked with them about being on, or, you know, heading out there to talk to them before. But I said, yeah, I'd be happy to do the July meeting. So this was set up pretty, like a little over a week ago, I guess. And so last Tuesday was probably our hottest day of the year so far. It was about 90 or so. And our kitchen is not air conditioned at all. So I came home, I took it easy for a while, cooled down after walking about 6 miles in the 90-degree weather. And then actually ended up making 3 3-gallon batches to serve at the Libby meeting in about 45 minutes, right? I made a strawberry sima, a hibiscus sangria short mead, and a cider I just dry hopped with Nelson Sauvin.
That's how many gallons of liquid?
Well, about 9 gallons total.
9 gallons total.
Yeah.
Available in a week.
Yes. So I did that all in about 45 minutes in our 90-degree kitchen, because the only thing you have to boil is enough water to heat to make tea with. So it's a pretty cool process.
What's the catch?
No catch. The seam is ready. We just cold crashed it.
The catch is that you keg.
Yes, that's true. I do keg. So if I bottled, it would take like another day or two, depending on when I, how much residual sugar is in there. Anyway, these are all recipes that are in my book. They're also available, Brew Your Own Magazine, which is the How to Homebrew Beer Magazine. We just got the August issue. They did an excerpt from my book on fast ciders. And they also have some really great, there's a super good article on using fruit in your beer, as well as forgotten hops. And Gordon Strong has a great article and recipe on making a Kentucky Common. And a Kentucky Common is a lower gravity. It's usually between, like, I think 5.5%. Let me get the article out. And it is a style that has just been added to the new 2015 BJCP guidelines. So if you're looking to brew something different, and that is now in the BJCP guidelines. Kentucky Common would be a good one, and Gordon Strong can tell you all about it in this July-August issue of BYO. We also got Zymergy magazine in our mail. I think I must have gotten it on Saturday. And it is also, it has the best beers. It's the 13th annual Best Beers in America issue, so they have a lot of really great clone issues. They also have a good article on how to clone your favorite beer, because a lot of times, you know, you want to make something that you maybe tasted while you were in California or Colorado or wherever, and you can't get where you live, like us in New York. So there's a really good article on how to go about cloning, as well as an article on how to make sati. That's always a fun beverage.
What is that?
Where does sati originate? It's Denmark or Norway or...
Let's look.
Or no, it's Finland. Finland, of course. So it's basically an old, they call it an ancient rustic style of beer from Finland, and it uses
juniper.
Anyway, so this
branches.
I haven't actually finished this article yet, but this is a really thorough article, and it has, of course, several recipes in it as well. And then if you look at the July-August issue of Draft Magazine, I am so thankful Josh Bernstein did an article on me.
It's awesome.
It's the nicest article ever. Anyway, but they have a lot of other great articles. I haven't finished that either. I just picked that up the other day. They just sent it to me. That's actually not
a lot of awesome
stands
articles,
yet.
And the one about Mary, too.
And the one about me, too.
It's a good picture of our kitchen, though.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm super excited because we have lots of local produce now. I also want to make, I just read a recipe for a cocktail, actually, that's like grapefruit, basil, and one other thing. And I want to do that with sugar. Do that. Sima is like basically a fermented lemonade. Really clean, nice, super delicious. Takes about 5 or 6 days to ferment out. So I just came across a recipe. I can bring it up. I pinned it on my Pinterest board.
And while Mary's looking at that, speaking of that kind of flavor, Big Alice is doing shandies for the summer on Saturdays and Sundays in their tap room.
That's super fun.
It is pretty fun. They had a lemon peach mint, a peach mint lemonade blended with their sour. Which one was it? No, it was blended with their lemon, you know, that other beer. The Honey Wit. The Honey Wit with the lemon. It was freaking awesome. It was great.
Shandies are fun. Totally good. Yeah. Right? Or Rattlers also. So that's another thing. If you have a nice beer that you've made, you know, blend it with a little homemade, especially homemade from scratch lemonade. That's a delicious, refreshing summer beverage. That's something fun to play with. Oh, yeah. So this was a Meadow Mocktails cocktail recipe that's in Food and Wine, available online. And it's basically lavender, basil, lemon juice, and grapefruit juice. Then it also has Angostura bitters. Of course, I'm going to leave that out. But I'm going to do a fermented batch of that this week as well. Have some fun with some grapefruits, lemon, lavender, and basil. I think that sounds delicious.
Grapefruit.
Sugar-based ferment, maybe some champagne yeast. On that note...
Next to you, grapefruit is my heart. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It on the Heritage Radio Network. My name is Chris. This is Mary.
We'll have Ben Granger on next Monday, so
tune in.
The Granger
Way. Way of the Granger next week. Woohoo!
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.